Let me quote here from Be a Hero, How to Counter a Terrorist Attack, The Essential Guide. It seems barely a week goes by without some new outrage unfolding on our television screens, and the numbers are increasing at a frantic rate. The facts on this are stark. In 2010, 15 terrorist attacks outside of war zones were recorded worldwide. By 2015, the numbers had rocketed to 118 separate atrocities. In the first 3 months of 2016 alone, 25 attacks occurred, including the destabilizing attacks on the Belgian capital, Brussels. By the end of the year, 432 people had been murdered and hundreds more were injured in terror attacks in the United States and Europe. This included the worst terror outrage in American history at the Pulse nightclub in Florida. On average, 20 mass shootings occur every year in the United States. These are devastating incidents. Usually they last no more than 20 minutes and usually a lot less. If you count the tally in war zones such as Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, Libya, and Iraq, the number of incidents soars into the tens of thousands. So countless thousands of innocent people around the globe have been affected by situations of extreme danger played out in otherwise everyday settings, and there is no sign it will abate. Hence the need for a how-to guide on how to survive a terrorist attack. John Geddes joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. John Geddes is a highly commended ex-SAS warrant officer. He was a sniper specialist and patrol medic and fought on operations alongside U.S. Delta Force. Later, he worked on high-risk protection roles for media clients in Iraq, and he now runs protection training regimes and consults with U.S. state and federal law enforcement agencies. Geddes lives in Orlando, Florida. He's the co-author of Be a Hero, How to Counter a Terrorist Attack, The Essential Guide. John, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Hi, thank you. Yeah, very good, thanks.
I'd like to start off just establishing again your bona fides here for the Coast audience, also getting a better understanding of your background. What exactly is a Special Air Service Warrant Officer?
It's a warrant officer in an army rank, the same as the U.S. Army. Special Air Service is SAS. It's a British Special Forces unit that has been in existence for 70 years now. Conceived during the Second World War for special operations behind enemy lines, and it's developed into, you know, many guises, many operational environments, and evolved into a very effective counter-terrorist unit.
So you took part in a lot of anti-terror operations and covert interdictions around the globe, working alongside U.S. Delta Force, for example. Can you tell us about any of those anti-terror operations, or are they classified?
Pretty much classified, but enough to say we you know, Delta Force and the British SAS work closely together. They have done since Delta Force conception in 1979, when a British squadron from the SAS went over and run their first selection course, and then after that Delta Force was born. And it's gone from strength to strength, and now one of the most foremost counter-terrorist units in the world.
The book focuses on three types of attacks. You have the bomb, you've got the gun, the active shooter, and then you have the combination of a bomb and a shooter. But lately, what we're seeing in places like Barcelona, most recently, of course, we have terrorists ramming into large crowds of pedestrians with cars and vans and trucks, and the other is some machete or knife wielding, you know, lunatic in a mall. Are these types of attacks, are they going to require, let's say, a second volume, or can we apply what's in Be a Hero to these types of violence as well?
Well, with the it's an evolution. It's a cheap technology evolution into terror. You don't need to risk manufacturing bombs. You don't need to risk bringing arms into the country or holding arms and ammunition illegally. You know, when you have a lethal weapon in a car, or a kitchen knife, or a garden knife. It doesn't have to be a combat knife, a combat machete, etc. It's just something from the back garden or the kitchen, and just as effective. And we can't live without those implements. And it's just people have the mindset, people, you know, radicals that have the mindset to use them. Normal people, I'd say normal, because we are pretty normal, wouldn't dream of using those implements in an offensive manner. But if you're a desperate sort of ideologist and stroke terrorist, you're going to use all means available. And in Be a Hero, you know, the situation awareness pretty much covers the you know, knife attacks and vehicle attacks. Just being aware of your environment, not being turned into a security operative and introducing stress. We don't want that for decent civilians. We just want to change the thought process and just be aware that it can and will happen to them at some point.
Right.
If
I
you
think
believe it
one of the
can
things.
and will happen, then you will mentally be more alert to your surroundings. And it's, you know, these particularly these vehicle attacks come from nowhere at high speed, and it's very hard to predict.
One of the overarching themes I like here is, you know, this idea in Be a Hero, don't be a sheep, fight back, because obviously we're dealing with people here who show no mercy. In many ways, I think they get off on the fear and the begging and the pleading. So often we're told, though, John, by authorities and the so-called experts, don't resist, it'll only make it worse. And I think back, for example, to that slaughter that took place at Virginia Tech 10 years ago, 32 people dead. And the shooter had time to reload and reload and reload. And I wondered, why didn't anyone have the presence of mind to organize a team of people to rush this guy, overpower him? And I'm wondering, are we losing our flight or fight instincts as a species? Are we losing our self-preservation instincts?
As a society, yes. I was just going to come back to that. We've forgotten how to fight, you know, and we're you know, Western countries have pretty much become nanny states, and totally psychologically and physically reliant on the authorities. And in these situations, the authorities aren't there for a very long time, and that between that from the time it starts until the authorities arrive and deal with a problem in the manner that they do, dozens of people can be killed. And within that time, if people get back into the habit of a mob mentality, it's rediscovering your mob mentality. You know, 1,000 years ago, men, women, and children fought for survival with each other and against their enemy, effectively as each other. But now, it's military, security operatives. They are the kind of people that are, and a lot of sportsmen that are used to team activities, individual combat specialists, boxers, martial artists. Those type of which is a very, very small part of the population. If they're caught up in situations like that, there may be a bit of, you know, a lot of leadership come from that, but people will follow. You know, if leaders come about, people will follow, and that's okay. It's okay to follow. Or if you don't want to do anything, then get out of the way and let somebody else do it.
Precisely. Let's talk about an active shooter situation. First of all, what is the, give us the, sort of the typical profile of an active shooter situation. Give us some intel on this.
Well, it's into the psychological makeup. I mean, it can go from just, you know, sociopathic individuals and typical backgrounds to radical religious beliefs, and that seems to be the majority of most attacks, and believing in one set of rules and enforcing their will onto other people in a very medieval way.
Typically one shooter or more than one shooter, typically.
Well, typically increasingly working in teams. It's not, the whole ISIS thing, the whole ideology thing is that nothing is, there's no command structure. It's belief in destruction of the West and its values as an individual or groups or pairs. And you've seen examples of individuals, groups, and also and pairs. So there's no, you can't pin it down to one kind of profile. If your neighbor next door believes in those medieval ways, and is totally brainwashed into action, then he will come from nowhere. And if it was three people from the next city working together, then the result will be the same.
So let's say, John, I'm sitting in a cafe somewhere with members of my family, and the unthinkable happens, and there's several people with guns, and they start spraying the area with gunfire. Walk me through this. How am I going to get myself and my family out of this situation alive?
I put this exact same question. I'm in London at the moment, and it's a millionaires club, and basically it was a downstairs boardroom, only 30 people in there, and we're talking about the book. And I said, okay, somebody bursts in here with a knife. What are you going to do? Pointing at people, and one said pray, one said chant, and the third one said hide,
Right.
And that is unfortunately is the mentality of most people, or the, not mentality, that's the wrong word, it's the mindset of most people is to just wait for authorities. So if somebody comes into a mall shooting, the first thing you're going to hear is the sound. Then instantly you have to move away from the sound. If the environment becomes a more close quarter environment where you're moving through corridors, classrooms, etc., move through and create as much. You need to disrupt the mindset of the shooter or the knife man or woman. You need to disrupt their psychology and make them uncomfortable using one hand. Block off corridors. Create obstacles. Create obstacles, and tables, chairs, anything. And so they have to fight through entrances. They have to take their hands. They have to take one hand off a weapon. It breaks their concentration. They can't focus. They can't shoot straight. They can't wield their weapons accurately. And as you're moving back very quickly, picking up any implement around you to use as a weapon. And just looking around you in your office, just look around you. What could you pick up to use as a club? What could you use to stab somebody? A chair, a table picked up together, or a chair pinning a knife man towards against a chair while somebody else picks up another chair and smashes them to the ground until he stops moving. That's how brutal people have to start thinking. And
I'm guessing that in these types of circumstances, John, that panic is your worst enemy, that all of this adrenaline that's coursing through our veins, heart and respiration rate going up, that's going to
yeah,
become a huge hindrance.
it is. We've all been panicked at some point. I've been, panicked myself. It's and you have to yeah you just have to try and control your fear, control the fear by being deliberate and trying to wrestle the emotional mind from the radical from the rational mind, and everything has to be a rational decision, not an emotional decision. You become exhausted very quickly. You start making mistakes. And, you know, once you start thinking rationally and deliberate, then, you know, you get a lot more, people can attain a lot more clarity in what needs to be done.
But is that something that you train for ahead of time in order to calm yourself? So that are there breathing exercises? How do you, when that moment arrives, that unthinkable moment, how do you switch off the adrenaline and learn to control respiration rate and all of these things?
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you're in the mode where you know you're hiding first, you're running away, you're moving away from the attack. You're hiding, and you need to control your senses so you can think straight. Deep breathing, coordination, exercises. One hand on your forehead, one hand on your stomach, concentrating on breathing out, and deep breathing. Bring your pulse rate down. Focus, concentrate on the way out and what to do, how to do it. Talk to people, pull people together, and that's the way you can do it.
Decompress, assess, and decide. So the decompress is I guess conquering the panic and so forth. Talk to me about assess and decide.
Assessing the situation, you have to make a dynamic risk assessment, and then make a decision. You make a decision, and hopefully that's going to be utilizing any equipment around you and any people around you. Talk about a plan. Instantly talk, what are we going to do, how are we going to do it, and let's do it, you know. So you have to communicate with people. You can't sort of sit there and do nothing. If you sit there and do nothing, you're dog meat, and you're going to get shot, you're going to get knifed.
Well, how does one know without military training what the right decision is? When do you know, for example, you know, when do you rush the person, or should you rush the person? Should you engage? Should you run? How do you make these split second decisions?
You can only run so far. If there's an option to run and keep on running, then that's fine, and get out of the place. But if you've got you know, if you look at the you know, a normal university, there's multi entrances, but there's not a lot of multi entrances. There's multi exits, multi entrances. You get a bit of smoke in there, maybe you had a fire, disorientation happens very quickly, and there is nowhere to run. There's nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. And like you said, with the shooter in the classroom, he had time to reload three times. And it takes you know, for the average shooter, it takes quite a few seconds to reload, charge his weapon, and start firing again. And then the firing has got to be accurate. So if in that very sad incident, people didn't do anything, and the result was terrible. Borough Markets in London. One of the attacks. A football supporter, a Millwall football supporter. I mean, he's a middle-aged guy. He's not a military guy, but he's a team player. He's always been a team player, and that's all it needs. You don't need to be military. You don't need to be, you know, a security type. You just need to be a team player. And be in the environment of leadership, and they're all the same elements. There was three knife wielding jihadists broke into a restaurant.
John, I'm sorry, excuse the interruption. I'm going to jump in here because we've got to take a time out. When we come back, we'll pick this up again. We'll talk about dynamic risk assessment and situational awareness, how to be a hero, how to counter a terrorist attack, the essential guide, with SAS Warrant Officer John Geddes. Here's John Prine taking us into the break with Lake Marie on Coast to Coast AM. And just a reminder, tonight, Sunday, George Knapp returns to the air chair. In the first half, Robert Hastings will join him. He's been approached by dozens of military veterans who were involved in UFO incidents at nuclear weapons sites, and he'll join George to discuss these testimonies, including that of a former U.S. Navy fighter pilot who took part in intercepts of a UFO that hovered over a plutonium production site. And then in the second half, author and ethnographer Tony Kale details the fascinating history of the southern folk magic known as hoodoo, which blends together various traditions and developed across juke joints and spirit churches across the deep south. That's tonight, Sunday, on Coast to Coast with George Knapp. When we come back, we'll learn about how to take cover from fire, gunfire, optimum places to take cover, everyday objects that offer the best protection, how to disarm a shooter, and a strategy for foiling a knife assault with John Geddes, author of Be a Hero, How to Counter a Terrorist Attack, The Essential Guide, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. John Geddes stays with us. He's an ex-SAS warrant officer. He was a sniper specialist and patrol medic, fought on operations alongside U.S. Delta Force, and he's the co-author of Be a Hero, How to Counter a Terrorist Attack, The Essential Guide. We'll also work in a few questions and comments if time allows. Talk to me, John, about this is a skill that every, you know, seasoned military combatant has, and that is taking cover from gunfire. This is a real skill that needs to be learned. What is the skill involved?
Yeah, I mean, it's no real skill. It's just being in the mindset. If there is any kind of ballistic material coming towards you, whether it is a knife, whether it's a weapon, a gun. You have to take cover. It's not like the movies. You know, you can't just hide behind a door or a table. You know, high velocity rounds are going to go through that. So you need to get behind some hard cover, and that's going to be concrete. It's going to be metal. It's going to be a wall as opposed to a door. And if you're moving from cover to cover, wherever you go down, behind the cover, you come up in a different place and then move fast from cover to cover, thereby evading the shooter, disrupting their aim, and making it more difficult for the shooter to get a bead on you.
Now, is this I'm guessing part of then the situational awareness. So when you go into a building or a restaurant, should you be sort of in the back of your mind sort of thinking to yourself, all right, if this place were to be targeted by a shooter, you know, where are the exits? Where is the cement wall I could hide behind? You know, where would there be maybe some available materials that I could fight back with? Maybe the kitchen. Where's the kitchen? That sort of thing. Is that how you approach it?
Yeah. Again, it's you know, we don't want to stress people out. We don't want to turn people into make people paranoid. There's not a bad guy behind every bush. But just having a relaxed attitude and mindset of protection, of protecting themselves, protecting those around them, protecting their family, and building in options for you to do just that, and not just yourself, but your loved ones, having them at a more developing them into a more a state of awareness of their environment. We live in a technological society, and people walk with looking at their phones, and they trip up and fall into the road, and just completely, totally switched off. And if anything happens around them, they're totally oblivious until they're caught up in it. So it's just a matter of, like you say, moving into a building, looking for potential hard cover, Soft cover for concealment. Where is the kitchen? Where are the fire extinguishers? Are they full? Do they work? Are they fully charged? And where are the kitchen? Looking around you for implements you could use to defend yourself in attack. Tables, chairs. Chairs are fantastic. It outrange the out you pick it up, outranges the knife. You've got four effective weapons on a chair that can cause harm to any potential assailant, backed up by somebody else that's working with you, can be very devastating in a gun or knife attack.
And what about disarming a shooter? There's a chapter in there about disarming a shooter. Now, if you're not—I mean, I know you mentioned this middle-aged football fan or soccer fan that helped thwart the attack in London. But you know, if you're not in particularly good shape, you're not particularly—you're not physically strong. I mean, to
And
me,
that's
it seems like a bit of a
the
crapshoot if you're going to try and go up against somebody with a knife or a gun.
that's the that's the I mean, it's only a very small percentage of the population that are conditioned and trained to fight. But sort of primeval sort of systems of work within your body, the fight flight sort of syndromes, means that you can fight if you're in danger, if you're left with no other option. Now, this guy wasn't particularly conditioned, as you say, with a middle-aged, unfit guy, but he had attitude. But he ignored the sort of he wasn't aware of picking chairs up. It wasn't in his mindset to pick chairs up, to pick bottles up, to pick glasses up. It was in a restaurant, a pub, weapons everywhere. And he chose to charge them, and he did. He put them off. He saved a lot of people. They decided not to go any further into the restaurant and wielding their blades. He spoiled their day, but he did get cut to pieces. They're talking three machetes. He put his life on the line to save other people, and then that was his basic instincts, untrained reaction to people that were going to do the majority harm, including himself, and he tried to do something about it. Very commendable, with a little bit of awareness, be a hero, just bits and pieces of pick up a chair instead of rushing. A knife, man, you can't fight a knife. All this martial arts, Krav Maga, it's all rubbish. With knives, we're not all conditioned. We're not conditioned fighters. We're just normal human beings. Vast majority of us, and they're the people that get caught in these situations. So, something more simple and more effective is just using body weight chairs, and batons and clubs to finish the job until they resist
Is there
and drop
a
the weapon.
strategy? Is there a strategy, John? Let's say you're not in a restaurant, you don't have access to a chair, you're taken by surprise, someone with a knife, and you've got nothing really on you. You don't have a weapon, and it comes up on you very suddenly. Is there a strategy? Is there a kind of a Hail Mary pass that you could utilize to try and
You have to create distance, and move away from the problem. But it's like I say, most people aren't conditioned to do that. The vast majority, there are a hell of a lot of older people, middle-aged people, out of condition, just getting on with the normal daily life, and it's a complete shock for a violent incident. It's a complete shock to the system. So that's where people get caught out. But unless you're on in the middle of the desert, there's always going to be some kind of implement you can use. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a lampshade. It could be a waste paper, a trash bucket or anything. It's just having something to hand to pick up, throw, disrupt, and deter an attacker. And as you're withdrawing, make the experience as uncomfortable as possible. You know, the people are sociopaths, psychopaths, single-minded. When you get people wielding knives and guns, and you know, to upset their psychology is very disturbing for them. And you know, it's breaking their patterns. This isn't supposed to happen. And that's where you can turn a disadvantage into an advantage. But you have to fight.
Because I guess in many of these instances, you're not dealing with trained military people. You're dealing with a psychopath or a sociopath or someone who, well, for lack of a better term, you know, a lone wolf who hasn't had particular military experience. So
no,
you got to use that to your advantage.
Yeah, and it's okay. They probably had as much training as you. Or I, or so, well, you or any other person on the street, even if they've had weapons around them. I mean, I socialize a lot on gun ranges in Florida, and you know, people have been carrying weapons, owning weapons for a long time, and they still don't know how to use them, you know, because that's not their primary. You know, they do it for fun. They don't
right.
do it for combat. They do it for fun, and so they're not conditioned into that combat sort of role, which is nice. That's the way it should be. You shouldn't, but you know, you get somebody who loses his mind for you know, psychological or religious reasons, and they just go for it. But they are not conditioned, trained people to the extent our services are. You know, they have no discipline. They have no
there's one saving grace
for life or limb.
There's one saving grace. Let's grab a call here. East of the Rockies, John is on Long Island, New York. John, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Your question for John Geddes.
My question would be, say, in the Orlando nightclub or in a church in Alexandria or Egypt, should people, like just common everyday people, even women in some cases, be allowed to carry a weapon on their person? Even it would be cumbersome, but if some, for example, that Orlando shootout lasted for, you know, what was it, a couple of hours where there was no resistance. If a couple of people had been armed, or if 10 of them, it could have been quelled, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it would be a pretty sad day when we had to totally, you know, civilians had to totally gun up, you know. And I don't think that's the issue. The answer to that is yes. If I'd have been there, the guy had been dead. If I was carrying, I was right next to him, he'd be dead, you know, as he got the first round off, you know. And a lot of people can say that, but it's where do you draw the line? You know, you carry a weapon, you get
it becomes confusing.
Sorry?
It becomes confusing as to who is who, yeah, maybe.
Exactly. And it's not the right way to go. It's not the right mindset to have. I think, you know, we've evolved into a largely unarmed society, you know, in the Western world, attitude-wise, not just physically, we're psychologically disarmed, because we rely on the authorities to help.
That's for sure. Let's go to
the way we're conditioned. So I just like want people to break away from that tradition, get back to the basic psychology and physiology, and recognize their past for what it is. And that's, we're all animals, and we sometimes we have to react like an animal, and to thwart these people.
Wild card line, Frank is in Hollywood, Maryland. Frank, good morning.
Hi, good guys. Glad to be back with you. I remember when the SAS they were consulted during the Branch Davidian siege in Waco, and they got valuable information from the ATF and the FBI got valuable information from the SAS. I have an idea. I've got three stones on my mat on my fireplace mantle. They're about one third the size of a tennis ball, but they have good weight to them. If a person could have these in their pockets most of the time, they are a perfect throwing object. If you can get a terrorist or a person who's wanting to do us harm, if you can distract him for a split second, and if you're 10 feet away or 5 feet away, if you can throw that stone to his head or temple, if you got nothing else, I'm going to start practicing with the three that I have. I just noticed them on the mantle, and I said, these could make a weapon if I have nothing else.
Well, but who wants to travel around with rocks in your pockets? If you're at home, that's fine.
That's not very practical to walk around with rocks in your pocket, but the principle is there. You know, you're wearing socks, take your socks off. Fill it with a few rocks that are lying around, or break up some pave stones, and you've got a weapon straight away. So you don't have to carry. You know, everything is in place anyway. You know, these weapons are all around us to be utilized. You're limited by your imagination.
All right, let's work in one quick call. A wild card line again. Buck is in West Virginia. Quick question, Buck.
Hey, Richard. Thanks for taking my call. By the way. In West Virginia, we have both open carry and concealed carry, for which neither you need a permit. And I would venture to say, statistically, and it might be due to the population, but we have a very, very low incidence of active shooter situations in this state. And I'm wondering if your guest thinks that has anything to do with the current laws in West Virginia.
It does. It does. I mean, it's like there's a lot of states that are traditionally gun carrying states, and they lived with it for generations. And there is, you know, you are correct, and there is low incidences, and obviously it is because a lot of people carry guns, and active shooters, although psychotic, or jihadists, they are psychotic. They're not stupid, and they don't want to die until it's their until it's the time of their choosing, not yours. So with people having concealed carry, open carry, traditionally in West Virginia, it's very true that I believe that has a serious bearing. But I think it's you know, for the states that don't have the generations of acceptance of weapons, I think it would be very irresponsible to say all of a sudden everybody can carry. Do you understand me?
Right. The other thing I think, John, is if you have a family. I don't want this to sound sexist, but you know, as the male, I think you have to assume the role of the protector and get yourself into shape as best you can. We can't all be, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, but we can at least do what we can to get ourselves in the best possible condition, and then just, you know, be ready. Be ready.
Yeah, be physically lean. You know, logically clean diet. You know, don't drink too much. Don't smoke too much. And be pretty middle of the road, have a nice relaxed attitude in mind, and do something fun. Get involved in sport, get involved in
absolutely
in anything communal that's going to generate leadership and respect within each other.
Okay, John, I gotta run, but thank you so much for this. And again, the book is Be a Hero, How to Counter a Terrorist Attack, The Essential Guide. John Geddes, thank you so much. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Chris Burrows, Sean Latasore, Michael Cozio, and Tricia Pepe, and here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scotty Guest, and Jackie Lamport, thank you for your ears and your voices your beautiful voices. I'm Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Until next time, so long for now.